Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, a filmmaker brings sci-fi works by artists of color to the theater stage. Then a pianist celebrates bringing classical music to the wilderness for a decade. And a muralist for the Warriors encourages us to dream big. Today's show is about dreams and visions, and that's all coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. This weekend, several screenwriters of color are bringing their sci-fi works onto the theater stage, and the show is called The Next 15 Minutes, Full Spectrum Futures. Actors will do dramatic stage readings of 15-minute excerpts from each screenwriter's script. And Oakland filmmaker Celia C. Peters is producing this event as part of her artist residency with the Betty Ono Foundation. And you can catch the event this Saturday, 6 p.m. at the California Ballroom in downtown Oakland. And here to tell us more and to talk some sci-fi Afrofuturism stuff is Celia C. Peters. Hey, Celia.
Hey, hello, hello.
Hey. You got some good stuff coming up.
I do. I should say we do. It's a bunch of us.
Yeah.
Doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear about this. I love dramatic stage readings of like plays. So I think it's a cool idea to do one for film. So where did this idea come from?
Thank you. Yeah. So actually I created and first produced a show when I was living in New York. And to be honest with you, it was like necessity being the mother of invention. I felt like I was not being, like, as a storyteller, not being seen or heard. And so I knew that if I felt that way as a Black woman screenwriter, there are other people feeling that way too. And so it's like, what do you do with that? Mm-hmm. And I'm not one to just sit and complain. I was like, let me make that lane then. We need that platform. And so that's where it came from. And then the format really was a product of how can I squeeze in the most story, make it the most budget friendly, you know, so that I can actually execute this and have it be powerful for the audience. And so I've always been a fan of radio theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, you know, made me think about that.
Mm-hmm, me too.
But also the magic of live performance, because that's really the key, having those actors there and having them there in character on a stage. Just, you know, and then, you know, having these 15-minute excerpts is like a variety show,
yeah,
in a way.
And it too, because I like it because, like you said, it kind of reminds you of like radio theater. But then you have the people there performing, even though it's a reading. So it's really cool. It's a nice way of imagining, you know, the story, especially when we think of sci-fi, like the effects, mm-hmm, and everything and the magic. So, yeah, I thought that was a really cool idea. Okay, so there was a jury involved in this. So is this a competition or was this like the result of a competition?
No, it was a competition. So there was a call for submissions from the screenwriters. And so the jury helped us to select the pieces that are in the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Because that's right. Because you were one of the jurors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I
okay.
was.
Okay. So judge and juror.
Exactly. Not executioner, but yes.
But one of your pieces will be performed.
Yes.
And it's called Godspeed. And it was selected for the Warner Media 150 Artist Studio. And so I know you've been working on this for a while. So tell folks what it's about so we can get an idea.
So Godspeed is a sci-fi thriller, and it's about a woman, a very ambitious, very successful woman who kind of starts to fall apart as she's like working on her crowning achievement, which is a cybernetic device that she's developing for a client of her of the company she works for. And, you know, things really fall apart as they do sometimes. And she begins to think that she's becoming psychotic. Until someone that she trusts without question tells her that the problem is not mental health, mental illness rather, the problem is that she is not human and that the only thing that will save her is on the world where she's from. So, you know, she's still facing this question of whether or not she's psychotic because she doesn't believe this. But she's torn and she has to figure it out one way or the other.
And she's on Earth.
Yes. She's all of it takes place on Earth. Yeah.
I'm thinking about that song and I can't remember the name of the songwriter. Earth is Ghetto. I Want to Leave. Earth is ghetto. I want to leave. And I'm thinking like this woman is stranded on Earth and is not human and it needs to leave to become well.
And, you know, it's interesting you say that, too, because the story is set in 2060. And so it's a lot of fun to imagine what the world, what the country will be like in 2060, what the city, right. what the Bay will be like in 2060. I mean, the Bay is already so much like ahead of the curve. And so it's yeah, I love that part of it. The world building for me is like, I love it. I love it.
Does it take place in the Bay Area?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
It does. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. So have you seen the rehearsals of how it'll look when they perform?
Yes. We just had our tech rehearsal last weekend, which is for, you know, people not in the industry, the tech rehearsal is like the final rehearsal where you have all the bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy that day. Like I was on a cloud when I left there, floating or buzzing or flying or all of it, because it was just really exciting. I mean, there's such talent here in the Bay, not the writer directors, but also the actors. And then the other part of it that's special and new about this iteration of the show is that we have a sound designer that we're working with. So this is really an immersive dramatic reading. We have that layer of audio that's going to be built into the reading.
Oh,
and so that
nice.
Really kind of, yeah, it takes you there. And the venue, the California Ballroom, is just beautiful. So that's also like a plus.
Yeah. I was at the California Ballroom a couple of weeks ago, and I saw, what's the author name? The sci-fi author with Locke.
Oh,
her name just escaped me.
Yeah, and I can see her face.
She's African Futurism.
Right.
Yes.
Nene Okorafor.
Yes, yes. So yes. Yeah, I saw her read and speak. So it's cool. So that sci-fi energy is already there.
Yes, yes.
She said it. So how about
Earth is Ghetto?
How did it feel for you though to actually see your work come to life on stage? I mean, that's what I'm excited about. What you all are doing is for like some of the screenwriters. I don't know. They may not have seen their work actually come to life. So to actually see it, even though it's not on film, but just to get an idea of like what it can be.
It's incredibly exciting. It's really hard to describe that feeling because you create these characters, you live with them, sometimes you talk to them, you're always kind of around them. And then to see someone else who's an actor actually interpret that character and make them alive, it's just, it feels like magic, but deeper. Mm. I don't know how else to say it. Like, it's really, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. And I could see some of the other writer directors, it's like this smile that, like, this huge, like, smile they would get on their faces, you know, just experiencing that.
Yeah.
So for me, that's, like, very gratifying. That's the name of the game, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the themes, or talk about some of the works that, by the other writers?
So we have a couple that are dealing with tech. One is is directly dealing with AI, mm-hmm. and just kind of the relationship between a human person and an AI who, and the AI says, I am a person, just not human. So there's that. And then there's another one that's a little bit more cyberpunk. And so it's just dealing kind of with these societal issues of like oppression, how technology is used to do that, what happens when people push back. There's another one that is dealing with, I guess it's more sort of, well, it's dealing with culture, and it's dealing with deities from Nigerian traditions. Mm. And so looking at this idea of culture, dual culture, and just sort of this otherworldly sort of transformative experience that the character is having. And then there's another one that has a bit of a historical angle to it,
okay.
which is very interesting. So it's like sort of past, future. And then there's mine.
So all different type of issues.
Yes.
I know too, I think immigration, I was reading one of the descriptions that that's in there too as well.
Yes.
So yeah, all different types of stories. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to filmmaker and visual artist Celia C. Peters. She produced the upcoming event, The Next 15 Minutes, Full Spectrum Futures. And it's where actors give dramatic readings of excerpts of works by filmmakers of color, and they do it on stage. And you can catch this Saturday, May 17th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the California Ballroom in downtown Oakland. We touched upon this before we officially started the interview, but I'm thinking of what you're doing this Saturday. I have to mention Sinners right now. It's a lot of sci-fi in the air right now, mm-hmm. which is such a huge hit. And I'm just thinking about how, like, you know, you describe some of the works that people have written that'll be on stage this weekend. I'm thinking about how surrealism, sci-fi, horror can speak to issues in such a powerful way. And we see this in works by other creatives of color. What mm-hmm. is the significance right now of artists of color creating sci-fi, horror, surrealism right now?
I think that in this fraught moment where there's just a lot of insanity that is bubbling up, it's a matter of agency. You know, when you're a storyteller, you determine the outcomes, you determine the characters, you determine who's in the lead, who is centered. Mm. And I think for, you know, storytellers and creatives from marginalized groups, particularly people of color in the United States right now, that is critical. It's critical for us as artists to be able to do that, but it's also really critical for our audiences to experience that. Other audiences have experienced that from day one, but we need that now. There's a lot of people who need that. And I think that the response to Sinners is really indicative of that. It's a reflection of that. And I have to say, like, you know, praise due, big up, congratulations, and thank you to Ryan Coogler, because he consistently creates these stories that are magnificent in such an artistic, a beautiful artistic way, but that cultural resonance is always there. He is a man who loves Black people, and it's very apparent from the way mm-hmm. that he makes films. And I feel like, you know, even in the next 15 minutes, each one of these writer-directors are coming from a different perspective. They all are writers of color, but everybody has their own unique perspective mm-hmm. on their identity and on their style of storytelling. So we, you know, that freedom and that agency is really critical. And I think especially right now.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a couple more minutes. And also, too, you know, I mentioned Sinners this morning, Disney Plus Marvel. They dropped the trailer for Ironheart, mm-hmm. which is about a MIT student genius / superhero / young yes. Black woman from Chicago. Oakland poet Shanaka Hodge is a screenwriter. Ryan Coogler is executive producer. I'm thinking of the Captain America movie that came out earlier mm-hmm. this year. One of the screenwriters from Berkeley, Malcolm Spellman. Freaky Tales used surrealism to speak on the magic of Oakland. Co-director Ryan Fleck is from the East Bay. I'm George mm-hmm. Lucas, Star Wars. What is it? And I know you're from Ohio.
Yes.
And like, again, we have a couple minutes. What is it about the Bay Area where we pumping out such great sci-fi, fantasy, surrealism?
Personally, I think there's something about the land. I don't know, because I certainly was drawn here, and I was drawn here for the reason that you asked the question. I think there's such a legacy and a history of really profound innovation coming out of this place, mm-hmm. you know, and I have to think that, you know, this is the unceded land of the Ohlone people. I think that has something to do with it. I think that there's whatever that energy is, people are drawn to it. People are inspired by it. And the more that happens, it builds the vibe,
yeah.
you know, it builds
yeah.
the vibe of this place. And so I'm very happy to be here, and I'm really happy to see the Bay Area, the East Bay, Oakland taking center stage in this innovation, because it's been innovating all along.
Yeah, no, it's really like, it's amazing. I mean, I was like, I've been waiting for a time like this to see this. Like, I've been waiting to see this, all these diverse stories from all different types of people. And then, too, just to celebrate the Bay Area. Real quick, how's your residency going? You're with Betty Ono. Congratulations.
It's, Thank you very much. It is going magnificently. They are such a wonderful, amazing partner. I have to say, I'm glad you asked me that because, you know, as artists, sometimes your relationship with institutions can go, it can go a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And I could say that with Betty Ono, they have supported my vision. This was what I applied to the residency with this show, doing this show. They're supporting it financially, but they're also supporting it in every other way too. Never asked us to tone anything down, never like try to cut anything or censor, like none of that. They are supporting artistic visions and providing the resources that we need to execute this show. And I can't, you know, that is like priceless, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest, it's priceless. So I, you know, for me, Betty Ono is walking the walk. They are walking the walk truly. And I think when you look at who sort of the inspiration for Betty Ono is, Betty Davis, the funk singer, and Yoko Ono, those are two women who were like definitely vanguard. Mm-hmm. And it's especially in this era, it's really refreshing, but also really reassuring to work with an organization that is not afraid of the vanguard. They're leaning into the vanguard and leading into the cutting edge fearlessly. So fearlessly and with quality, with style, with grace, with refinement, you know, that is, yeah, it's happy. Made me very happy.
Well, yeah, when you have artistic freedom as an artist. So, okay, so y'all know you all, folks out there listening, you're going to get the real deal for this show on Saturday. Celia C. Peters, thank you so much and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Janae. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's great to see you again. I'm great to hear you again.
Yes, anytime, anytime. Celia C. Peters is an artist in residence at the Betty Ono Foundation. Her show, The Next 15 Minutes, Full Spectrum Futures, is this Saturday, May 17th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the California Ballroom in downtown Oakland. And you can register on Eventbrite for a free ticket. Free. We don't get that often in the Bay, so definitely go out and support. We'll have a link on KALW's Sights and Sounds page for more information. And coming up, would you go to a piano recital in the wilderness? Well, we'll talk to one artist who's been making that happen for 10 years. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darton. And the music you're hearing is by classical pianist Hunter Nowak. Hunter grew up in the small town of Sun River, Oregon, where he discovered a passion for music and nature. For 10 years, he's been putting on the concert series In a Landscape, Classical Music in the Wild. Hunter tows a grand piano to perform in places such as state parks and deserts and by the sea. And over the years, he has played hundreds of these concerts for about 75,000 people. And he is bringing his show to the San Francisco Botanical Garden next Wednesday on May 21st. He'll also be at the Filoli Historic House and Garden on May 19th to 20th and Jack London State Historic Park May 23rd and the 24th. Hunter's educational background includes studying at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, and he's an alma mater of my school, USC, fight on. But anyway, here's my conversation with Hunter Nowak. Hunter Nowak, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Wow. Just what you do is just so, so beautiful. Man, just the videos I've seen and the music I've heard from those videos, I can only imagine what it's like in person. Tell us, where did this idea come from to go out into the deep wilderness of nature and perform classical music in front of an audience?
So I was really inspired when I first started this by the Works Progress Administration, the WPA. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, there was a federal stimulus plan to get us out of the Depression. And as part of that plan, there was a federal music, theater, and writers project. And with the music and theater project, thousands of free concerts and plays were presented, many of them in our public lands. And the two things I loved about the WPA is that, one, the arts were a part of this government stimulus plan, which signaled to the American people that the arts, they are in fact as important to the overall health of our society as things like roads and post offices. And the other thing was that it brought the fine arts out of this performance spaces that can sometimes feel exclusive and into what I believe are our most democratic spaces, which are our public lands. And it was actually kind of my mother's idea. She was helping me with a different grant application, and she said, wouldn't it be cool if you could just bring a piano, you know, on like a truck or a trailer to these places?
So what are some of the most difficult places you've performed?
The most difficult places we've performed, one of them was in Big Sky, Montana in -2 degrees. We had worked with the Warren Miller Performing Arts Center and Big Sky Resort to actually get a snowcat to bring the piano trailer out into this field where they groomed a cross-country ski trail so people could ski and snowshoe around the piano. But that was just like physically really difficult for me to play with my fingers being so cold. But, you know, we play in rain or shine. We've played in over 100 degrees in the heat. And sometimes the most challenging weather-wise concerts, you know, it's like we've kind of gone through something together, me with the audience, and they're some of the most fun concerts.
Playing on a church basement piano. You're playing on a Steinway, right? Like a really beautiful, expensive piano, one of the pianos of pianos. So how do you protect it from the elements?
Yeah, so this is a 1912 9-foot Steinway Model D. It's the same size and model of piano that's in Carnegie Hall and in most major halls around the world. And they're actually quite resilient and robust. They're really meant to tour and to move. But what we've done is we've actually swapped out some of the internal parts that are traditionally made with wood with a new technology that's developed by Wessel, Nickel, and Gross so that some of the more sensitive parts are now fabricated with carbon fiber and plastic. Which doesn't change the sound of the piano. It just makes it so that it's a little bit more resilient to the dramatic changes in heat and humidity. We've actually just refinished the piano with a slightly more durable finish. And it's actually like this kind of car paint. It looks like this sort of traditional satin finish, but it's actually kind of just more robust. We've taken this piano on hours of washboard dirt roads. We've taken it up mountains. And I'm amazed and delighted every time that we open the piano and everything still works. I think it's a testament to Steinway, to the craftsmanship and the quality of the instrument. If this were any less of an instrument, it wouldn't be able to take what we put her through.
So you don't have to repair it a lot.
No, we do. A technician works on the piano before every concert, so tunes it up and spends, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours with it before every show because it does get out of tune. And the wear and tear on the piano means that, you know, every 4 years or something, we have to do kind of major work to it. And some piano technicians are very concerned for the instrument and almost like appalled at the conditions that we put it through. But I think that it's totally worth it. We could do this with a keyboard or a smaller piano, but I think that it's important to have the best instrument in the world. And, you know, about 75% of our concerts take place in rural areas where folks don't have the same access to the performing arts. Like they have to drive 3, 4, 5 hours to get to a concert hall. And even if they were going to do that, you know, they're probably not going to do that to go to a piano recital. So, you know, for about 30% of our audience, this concert is their very first experience with live classical music. And so I want that first experience to be the best. I want it to sound the best. I want it to sound like they're getting the same concert hall quality sound that they would get in Carnegie Hall. Thank you.
you know, I was thinking about how you combine the old with the new. You take a very old art form, classical music, classical piano, and you bring it to nature. You bring it to places that have existed for thousands of years, in some instances. And then you add the technology. And when people come to your show, they're given headphones to have a deeper experience of the music too as well. Now, if I'm thinking like, well, why do I need headphones if I'm sitting there listening to you out, you know, by the sea? So why headphones?
Yeah. What the headphones do is a couple of things. One is they allow you to have kind of better sound, whether you're close, right up close to the piano or far away. So people will bring their blankets and chairs and kind of set up usually around the piano, get comfortable. But throughout the concert, during the program, I like to kind of introduce every piece. And sometimes, you know, I think the piece is especially good for wandering. But there's one piece in particular called Reflections in the Water by Claude Debussy. And I'll, if we're by a body of water, I'll tell people to take off their shoes and go into the water and just like kind of study the light or look at the light and see kind of how Debussy is playing with that visual image in sound. Other pieces I feel like are really kind of visceral, and I want people to be right up next to the piano. So I'll invite them up onto the stage to lie underneath the instrument. They can put their hands on the piano and feel the vibrations of the instrument in their bodies. I like for each piece to kind of have something that brings them, that draws them into the landscape or draws them into the music and into right next to the piano. And the headphones give us that kind of versatility. The other thing that the headphones do is they kind of make it so that your neighbor, you know, if your neighbor's crunching on some chips, it doesn't like take you out of the experience. A lot of people say like when they're out maybe wandering around, you know, in the woods, for example, and they see somebody else with headphones on, they can make eyes and maybe have like this understanding that they're having a shared experience. And in a way it's like connecting.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're bringing community together. It's sensual in the sense of like just activating so much of the senses too as well. You know, because you could touch the piano, you can, you know, feel the vibrations of the music. And then too, just being able to just have contact with nature and the hearing and the taste. And, you know, because I'm the one that munches chips. I sneak a few chips in sometimes. Yeah. So there's taste, there's sound, there's, wow, it's just really, and it's also meditative to me. If you're just joining us, I'm chatting with classical pianist Hunter Nowak. He's celebrating the 10th anniversary of his concert series In a Landscape, Classical Music in the Wild. He's going to be performing at the San Francisco Botanical Garden on Wednesday, May 21st. And if you want to venture out a little further, he'll also be at Filoli Historic House and Garden on May 19th to the 20th and Jack London State Historic Park on May 23rd. So we have just a few more minutes, but you talk about just how immersed people in the audience are when they experience your performance. What about you? What is going through your mind? What is going through your body, through your senses, your spirit? When you're out there by those mountains, by the sea, in the desert, what's going through you as the artist?
Yeah, I love performing outside. I mean, I love the concert hall as well. But what I love about performing outside is that I feel like I'm on the ride with the audience. You know, the landscape is ever changing. And if there's, you know, if the sun comes out of a cloud or a rainbow pops up or the rain starts to come down, like we are all in that moment together. And a lot of the time, actually, it changes the music that I play. Like if it starts to rain, I'll play this piece called Gardens in the Rain. And it sounds just like the beginnings of a rainstorm. And, you know, to have that kind of spontaneity is not, it's just not really built into the kind of the traditional classical experience in a concert hall. And so this just feels so much more like free to be playing this music. You know, I play music that spans the kind of the last 300 years. Some of them, like this year, I'm playing some music that was arranged by the great pianist Stephen Huff from the musical Mary Poppins, by, you know, music by the Sherman Brothers. And so there's light music. There's more serious, dramatic music. I choose music that doesn't necessarily make like programmatic sense in an intellectual way. It's music that makes me feel something. Like, that's what I'm trying to get at, is a music and an experience that makes us like just settle in and open up to feelings.
Yeah. I know they do. They have to. I want to cry now just thinking about it.
Yeah. You know, it's like what's kind of wild is, you know, most of the time when we're outside in a park, we like we're going on a hike, or we're having a picnic, we're doing something. And what with music as the activity, suddenly all of our senses are just like, there's space for them. There's space to just look around and watch the leaves dance, and there's space to feel the breeze and, you know, lie down, close your eyes. And I feel like this music becomes this soundtrack to just being in beauty. And so it does. I think it's very emotional, especially when we're so accustomed to moving.
Yeah. Hunter, I think what you're doing is not only just music, it's medicine. I'm sad because I'm not going to be able to make your show, but definitely I'm manifesting in the near future. I will definitely be somewhere out there with the privilege of listening to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Janae. Thank you so much for having me.
Hunter Nowak's concert series is In a Landscape, Classical Music in the Wild. Again, catch up at the San Francisco Botanical Garden on Wednesday, May 21st, and in Woodside at Filoli Historic House and Garden on May 19th and 20th, and Jack London State Historic Park in Sonoma Valley on May 23rd and the 24th. Next up, a mural in downtown Oakland reminds us to hold on to our dreams. Keep it locked right here. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. This has been an exciting year for basketball in the Bay Area, from the NBA All-Star Game that was hosted here to the Warriors being in the playoffs. And you know, art is part of basketball culture too. Timothy B. is a muralist from Oakland, and his work focuses on uplifting African indigenous communities, especially the youth. The Warriors commissioned him to paint a mural in honor of this year's NBA All-Star Game. It's called Hoop Dreams, and you can see the spectacular work in downtown Oakland on 22nd Street and Broadway. And I must say that it spoke to the kid in me who used to daydream in her East Oakland bedroom about being a writer one day. I met up with Timothy B. right in front of his mural to talk about his artwork and dreaming during hard times. So come with me to downtown Oakland. So I'm here on the corner of Broadway and 22nd with artist Timothy B. And I am looking at this incredible, incredible mural. First of all, Timothy, it's good to see you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, this piece, I can't even call it a piece because it takes up a whole building. And this mural was commissioned by the Warriors?
Yep. This mural was for All-Star Weekend.
It's incredible. Is there a name for it?
Hoop Dreams.
I grew up in East Oakland. Okay. And you grew up in Oakland.
I grew up by the lake. Okay. Yeah, Harrison, Garland View, Zach. Okay. You know, okay. Lake. Okay. Lake, man.
I grew up in Melrose. I'm old school, so yeah. I still say East 14.
Yeah,
East 14.
As you should. Yeah. As you should.
So when I saw this, And this theme of dreams, it just really resonated with me.
Yeah.
So it's a kid, it's a black boy. He's laying on, I guess, his bed.
Yeah.
And he has his headphones on. And he has a basketball pushed into the air. Yeah. Like, you know,
yeah,
like when you were a kid and you dreaming and yes, yeah. And you probably seen himself on the court.
Yeah.
Or you know, wherever he wants to be later in life. So where did the concept come from?
Well, I'm that kid. You know, I had dreams of becoming an all-star. You know, I had hoop dreams all through my life. So when the Warriors came to me with this concept or with this idea to, you know, paint for an all-star weekend, I started to reflect on me doing all-star weekend of 2000, year 2000, when Vince Carter, you know, won the dunking contest. I started thinking about all my favorite players, Allen Iverson, Steve Francis, Tracy McGrady, and so on. And just, you know, just my basketball experience during that time. Everything was about basketball, you know, when I was a kid. Like, I used to eat, live, breathe basketball, you know, even more so than art at the time. So
the mural, I mean, it was really a story.
Yeah.
So when you start on 22nd, I see this old school TV with an antenna,
exactly.
All-Star 2000.
Yeah.
So you're taking this back. And I see Bill Russell's jersey, number 6, hanging up on his wall. I see posters. Who's that? Who's that, the rapper?
Too Short.
That's Too Short. Okay.
Yeah.
So I see, like, yes, I see Too Short. I see a Tupac poster. So
yeah.
So you done set the scene for the day.
Yeah.
And so then next to him is this beautiful, just facial portrait of this young man, and he's in purple.
Yeah.
Purple and white.
Yeah.
And he has a headband on with 3. Is that like third eye?
It's really that's really my logo. Only did a piece of it, 'cause I couldn't fit the entire thing on it, but it's a TB. And usually it's a crown on top of it. It's a Dinker symbol called the wisdom knot. It means ingenuity, patience, strength, and I want to say resilience. And so I try to place that on his headband, you know, to right next to his third eye.
That's deep how it came out like that.
Yeah, thank you.
So, and he has this purple. So why the purple?
Well, the purple just communicate royalty. So this year specifically, I've been trying to, like, change up my skin tones, you know, do less browns and do more like blues and purples just to communicate that royalty, you know, just within, you know, just within us.
And he looks so intense, and he looks kind of in a dream state.
Yeah.
It's like he's looking at something.
Yeah, he's looking into his future.
Mm. Okay, amazing. And so then the next chapter of this story is a basketball player, number 18.
Yeah.
Now who's, is there a number 18?
No.
Okay, that's what I was about. Okay, and it says Oakland.
Yeah.
And it's the Warriors colors.
Yeah.
Y'all know how I feel about that.
Yeah. I'll feel you.
We missed the Warriors in Oakland.
Yeah.
But at 18, so I thought that was cool too, because I was like, there's not a number 18. There's not a player number 18. Now who is that man?
All right, so again, this is all inspired by my own journey, my own story. But number 18, that's actually my birthday, born August 18th. So then the character, he actually looked like a good friend of mine. Yeah.
I love that. And then there's the town.
Yeah.
I see the Tribune Tower, Town Biz. I see that archway that's over Lake Merritt.
Yeah.
Which you grew up near Lake Merritt.
Yeah.
I see the basketball courts that's from Lake Merritt. And then the sun is setting.
Yeah.
What a beautiful tribute to Oakland.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Which is kind of like, for me, it's like, even though that's the end, but it's like, that's where it all began.
That's where it begins.
That's where it began. How do you see yourself as the dreamer and the artist in this gorgeous work of art?
I see myself as a dreamer and an artist because it started from a dream, and I became this, like, you know, even this well-respected artist, which I never really imagined dream myself to be of becoming, and I became that, you know. So it's like, you know, even though I started as, like, I started with hoop dreams, I ended up becoming an all-star muralist, you know. And I think that just, that's amazing, you know, because sometimes, like, you know, life just unveils, like, you know, realities that we never could plan for. I hope that this piece will inspire, you know, the youth, you know, just to think bigger than what they could ever imagine. Especially growing up in this city, you know, we limited to certain beliefs, to certain perspectives of ourselves, you know. Like, even myself, you know, I never imagined myself becoming a muralist. You know, I didn't know many muralists, I didn't even know many street artists, you know, but it started with the dream, and I became something bigger than what I could ever imagine for myself. And same with, you know, the community around me. They never seen me becoming this person. You know, I just became. Even some of my family be like, man, Tim, like, what happened? Like, how did you become you? It's like, you know, it's like, man, I can't even put it in words. I'm not sure, you know, but yeah,
two things. So when you were playing basketball in high school, okay, who'd you play?
Basketball in high school, I played in Stockton at the time.
Okay. So when you were playing basketball in high school, you were drawing too?
Like, I never stopped drawing. Like, okay. Drawing was always my way of just expressing whatever I was dealing with, you know. It was my way of just, like, grounding myself, you know. I think that led to me having as much patience as I have today.
You know, we love Oakland, but we know Oakland has its problems. And so, for people like us, it can be daunting sometimes, and it can be hard to dream. And for people who even going through, you know, a lot of things, that may be worse than what we've gone through. Because I know you've had some hardship, like your dad was incarcerated, right, for a long time. I know that had to have been heavy, you know, carrying that.
Still heavy.
It's still heavy. Yeah. He's out, right?
He's out, but, you know, sometimes incarceration is within the mind, you know. So it's like, yeah, his body is free. But now, you know, he got to find a way to free his mind from all that, you know, and that's a challenge, you know, for him to watch, and also to the family to support, you know.
Yeah. How long has he been out?
I think it's been about 9 years now.
Okay. I look at this piece, and it reminds me that, you know, no matter what you're going through, you can still dream.
Yep.
And things are still possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But, you know, even for myself, you know, I think, you know, I'm fortunate to have the type of family I have where I've been able to dream, you know, because it's not like you said, when you're dealing with certain realities, certain, you know, struggles, it's not easy to dream. It's not easy to think beyond the conditions or the environment you're in. You know, I'm grateful to have, again, the mother I had, you know, my grandmother, you know, who is a historian, you know, who always poured information just about, you know, our people, where I've been able to imagine, you know, a future for myself. You know, like, art is a form of escapism for me, you know, so I've been able to escape through the paints, through the pencils, through, you know, the graphites, into a whole different world. You know, and this is my dream. This is part of it, I would say.
So you dream images before you, like, do they come to you in dreams?
I daydream a lot too. You know, I daydream a lot.
Can we talk about that? I love daydreaming.
Yeah, I'm big on it. You know, like, I'm big on it. You know, a lot of times, you know, my mind just goes. You know, I'm a dreamer. I'm a dreamer. I'm a manifester. You know, and through my dreams, you know, I manifest the things I feel I deserve. This is what I do full time. You know, I get paid to think and to, you know, create narratives, to tell our stories, and to imagine the past, present, and future for not just, you know, our people, but for everybody in these environments. You know, so I spend a lot of time in silence. I spend a lot of time listening to music. I spend a lot of time, you know, watching films and, you know, imagining, Yeah, I love it.
Because no, it's funny, when I was little, I daydreamed a lot. And, like, I would have, you know, like, my parents or elders say, step out of it. Yeah. I'm not dreaming anything, like, evil.
Yeah.
Because I'm creative. I'm a writer. Yeah. So my mind is like, yeah. I just love to let it wander and just do what I want to do. Yeah. And I'm an only child, too. So, like, I really was daydreaming. You only child? Yeah. See, that's what... You know, we have big imagination. Did your grandma want to come in, jumping up? Did you want to jump in on the discussion? You don't have to.
Of course she does.
Oh, Miss Patsy, this radio.
Oh, okay.
So he said you are a historian.
I am. In context of life, I put things into perspective. I'm a retired elementary, middle school teacher.
And what's your name? I called you Miss Patsy, but it's Patsy.
My name is Patsy Lax Lockhart.
So you taught him a lot of history, like Black history.
My job to teach U.S. history was to teach the history, but conventional history did not include us. So I would use people like John Hope Franklin.
The great historian, yes.
Right. I would use his book as a supplement to what was I was required to teach. My passion is to learn about the history of our people, because we started mankind. And you never know where it goes until you come across a grandson like Timothy, who gives it back to you in ways that you probably would not have known.
So looking at this astounding artwork, this astounding mural, what comes to your mind?
Well, my favorite piece is the young man in the middle. He's a metaphor for, to me, our whole survival. And Tim is a lot like that. He's gone through a lot of challenges, but he's had a lot of celebrations and things to hold in pride. But I do see him that I matter. And you should pay attention to me, because I am from the past and I am your future. And so every time I look at him, my heart beats, my spirit beats. And so I'm just really proud of Tim for capturing that. Tim represents that young man. So he's my oldest grandson. It's a blessing to be able to stand here and look at this image and to listen to Timothy B.
And we see, you know, little Timothy's dreams of hooping.
Yeah.
And then the dreams of greatness turn into art.
Yeah.
What is your dream now?
Yeah, my dreams right now is to, again, have security, you know, when it comes to space, finances, and, you know, travel. You know, I want my family and I to be able to travel wherever we choose, and to, you know, have space outside of the States, outside of where we live, you know, and with everything going on right now in our economy, I don't want to feel stuck here when everything goes down. Like, I'm starting to look into, you know, educating my son in different environments.
Sometimes I tell our listeners to, like, take one moment out of your day to look at something beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate your work. This is definitely something that is beautiful, this mural. And just thank you for making Oakland beautiful.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. You know, and I want to add something. So I just completed another piece at Oakland International High School off 48th and Webster. And I think that piece is just as powerful as this piece. I love this piece, but I kind of like that piece a little bit more. That's one of my favorites right now.
Okay, so you know I'm gonna definitely go see that.
Yeah, yes. Definitely, it's fire.
Thanks again to muralist Timothy B. and his grandmother, retired school teacher Patsy Lax Lockhart. Thanks to KLW's Porfirio Rangel for being the field producer on this interview. And you can see Timothy's Warriors mural, Hoop Dreams, on 22nd Street and Broadway in downtown Oakland. Go to the Sights and Sounds page on KALW.org to see photos of the mural. but I highly encourage you to see Timothy's work in person. It's really just astounding. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Thank you again to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. Please go support your theaters like the Aurora Theater Company in Berkeley. They've been having some issues and they're struggling. We want to keep them around. Also, check out the Malcolm X Jazz Festival this Saturday at San Antonio Park in Oakland. And shout out to Medicine for Nightmares Bookstore. If you're going to see John Batiste this weekend, I'm jealous because I didn't get tickets. So enjoy that show. I'm hating on you. I'm hating on you, but I'm sending you love. All right. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, please be good to yourselves and each other. Look at something beautiful. There's so much going on in the world and in the country right now. That's why the arts are here. So make sure you just dive into some arts or, again, take some time to look at something beautiful.